Young Turks, everybody. You're here. We're here. It's going to be a great show. It's Friday. It feels like a Monday for me. I had my shirt unbuttoned in as recently as 6 seconds ago. We got Ryan, Michael, Ben, an amazing power panel. How are you doing, Ben? You look dapper, as everybody does.
He does look nice.
I just think that it's time that we sort of stepped up our game here at the Young Turks. At least I thought that before I came in today. Mm-hmm. Now I realize that doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter at all. Why do you look so sharp? Full suit, by the way. Most of us are usually in boxer shorts underneath, but you have full pants suits.
I do. I went with the pants today. Obviously, I had something else more important and more distinguished to do.
And is it before before or after? Before you got here, or
already
are you going
done.
Off to it?
Already done. Already done, yeah.
So you had the option to get rid of the whole getup, but
yeah,
you...
I didn't go home.
Got it.
I didn't go home.
I actually think the best part about his outfit is his hair, though.
Yeah. Always.
Yeah, God, I mean, it's amazing.
God bless, Ryan.
I can't tell you how perilously I try not to show certain angles of the back of my head on this show. Because it's happening. I'm 35. Good morning. All right, we have some announcements before we get into the show too deep. One thing that we're very excited about, I don't know if you guys have used Pluto TV before. I've used it. We've had clips put up there in half-hour chunks. Well, now this show that you're watching, in addition to being live on YouTube, is available live on Pluto TV. You can watch it on your smart TV, download the app on your mobile device, take it with you. You can also watch it on your desktop. So the Young Turks channel is channel 116. And this is in addition to the other network shows already available on the platform, like TYT Politics, TYT Interviews, and TYT Sports. Pluto's awesome. You can get lost in Pluto.
I'm just glad that there's finally an app. That's what it is, right?
Yeah.
It's more, a little more than an app.
It's a whole new
way of watching television, right? But it's about time that sort of Eddie Murphy's best work were recognized, The Adventures of Pluto Nation.
You know what I'm excited about? It's like I've always wanted to just be able to go to a site or an app and just be like, okay, start, and then have my TYT like pop up.
Yes.
Right? You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of like what this is, which is awesome.
All of this happening right now is on that. We also have, I think I can do all this stuff at the break, so let's just get right into it. We got a lot of very important news we're going to get into. Starting this very moment. So it turns out Mike Pence, our vice president, while he was governor of Indiana, used a private email server to do his correspondence in certain matters. According to the Indianapolis Star, quote, Pence communicated via his personal AOL account. He had an AOL account is how he chose to keep up with his correspondence, because those CDs, he had 90 minutes all stored up. His via personal AOL account with top advisors on topics ranging from security gates at the governor's residence to the state's response to terror attacks across the globe. In one email, Pence's top state homeland security advisor relayed an update from the FBI regarding the arrests of several men on federal terror-related charges. Now, when asked, this is the response that the vice president had.
The email practices, we're in full compliance with all of Indiana's laws. There's no comparison whatsoever between Hillary Clinton's practice, having a private server, mishandling classified information, destroying emails when they were requested by the Congress and by officials. We have fully complied with all Indiana's laws.
So that's what he says. But if you read up on what exactly, how this information came to the public, it's because some of it was released by the new governor of Indiana. And according to the Indianapolis Star, Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb's office released 29 pages of emails from Pence's AOL account, but declined to release an unspecified number of others because the state considers them confidential and too sensitive to release to the public. Any emails Pence sent from his AOL account to another private account likely would have been hidden from public record searches unless he took steps to make them available. So, you know, whatever you think about private email accounts, if you wanted to go after Hillary Clinton for it, there's clearly a hypocrisy happening.
Is there?
What do you think?
I'm not really sure about that. So in 2015, the Wall Street Journal said that, did a survey, and over a third of government employees use personal unsecured email account, which I did in every single government employee that I've ever known, and I've been in a government employee my entire adult life.
Really?
So, and here's the thing that Chuck Grassley said in 2015. I just want to quote it to make sure completely accurate, and I'll just change the gender here. I think they all fall into one great big mistake he made, and it could be a violation of law, probably is a violation of law. Some people are suggesting he could even be prosecuted. And it's as simple as this. He was using a private email address instead of a government one, and it probably violates the Freedom of Information Act, and it probably violates the national security legislation. Thing is it doesn't.
It doesn't.
It doesn't. And just like Hillary didn't, it doesn't here either.
That's right.
Because what happens is the Freedom of Information Act, they have to have a request, and that means you have to provide the documents. Pence does provide the documents. He did save his AOL account so that you can retrieve those emails, and you have it. It's a potential violation of record-keeping regulations if the things were classified, but that still remains only something that's internal memo stuff that isn't really a big deal. I don't know. I mean, I just feel like this is a big waste of time when you're talking about emails. It's like what these things are is like we operate in chaos theory. There's too many things that come at us all at once, and we make these laws that seem to make sense when the time you start drafting them, and then time they're implemented, they're really outdated and irrelevant. This is just like stuff they're trying to codify, like technology from 15 years ago. This isn't really relevant.
But look, you were a police officer, right, Michael?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now I understand, like, we shouldn't be looking in your private emails, like, and your Tinder account and whatever else, right? But like, I've worked for elected officials and people running for office, and in my experience, there's only one reason you have, like, this personal email account you use for government business, and then you have, like, your government email account. And if you're conducting government decisions on that private email account, in my experience, there's only one reason to do that, and that's to shield it from that Freedom of Information Act. It's to be able to make decisions and have conversations and do things that are against the public interest or in someone else's private interest.
Yeah,
right?
This has a top secret classification, man.
Right, well, you shouldn't be talking about it on your private email account.
No, I see nothing in it.
I didn't see anything in the, you know, if I didn't see it, I think that, so the hypocrisy would be that, to me, I would be like, we shouldn't be making a big deal about this, nor should we have made a big deal about that. And most of us, most Americans, don't have a firm grasp, neither does Mike Pence, unless, of course, he's just being political, which is fine, as to what Hillary did. He's just starting to say stuff. Destroyed emails, mishandled classified information, which was not the actual finding of the FBI that they mishandled classified information. So, first of all, a couple things I like. If Hillary Clinton, I wish, had used an AOL account, because then we'd have heard, you've got jail.
Which, oh, that's really good.
Right, which is a great,
really
I think, a loss for America. And then I like the notion that that their big get is like, oh, no, we found out he had a private email exchange about the federal officials arresting people on terrorism charges, which would have been public. I mean, it's not like... there's no aha moment there. I also, defending in general politicians who use private email, I have no doubt that you're right about shielding the public and protecting the shielding themselves from the public.
And not for noble purposes.
Not for noble purposes.
For corrupt ones.
You think Mike Pence is facile enough, and guys like Mike Pence are facile enough to remember to use the different email accounts. And this is not a make fun of old people. This is a legitimate man. It was hard enough to get me to understand how to do this in general. And now I got to remember which is which for which email account to switch back and forth.
I think
that some of that has to do, we know it was true with Hillary, who was like, wouldn't give up the BlackBerry because she couldn't figure out how to use anything else.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, AOL works, though.
You're giving me a look.
Sorry.
No, that's not a defense of why they kept a separate server. They shouldn't have kept a separate server. It showed political tone.
Here's the reality. Mike Pence has enough Republicans defending him, okay, like, on this issue. We don't need to, like, join the chorus.
But this isn't identity politics,
bro. Hear me out. But I'm with you in the sense where I'm like, look, I'm with Bernie. Enough about the damn emails. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm not with anybody. Stick to what the facts are of the case and consistent methodology and all this. This demonstrates the identity politics that we're having. I read this quote. It's from 2015 talking about Hillary, and I just changed the gender so that it was a male. And this is just a thing that takes us away from everything that matters. For instance, right now, Camden, New Jersey is about to do radical police reform, and they have a radical mayor coming in to talk about it. And we got seven fucking stories on Trump.
What's the Camden story?
We can't do it because nobody's going to talk about it. So in Camden, New Jersey, we have a young black mayor named Rashad who's coming up running for mayor. He has a lot of community support. He wants to do my civilian-led model where he's actually going to put control of policing in there. We're going to try to connect him with the Justice Democrats so we can get a big radical reform movement instead of bitching about the same politics we've been bitching about for 100 years.
Have we well, been that might be AOL politics for 100
AOL is
fair
only
point.
75 years old. AOL, in its defense, is only 75 years old. One of the reasons I really love this story is A, because it's AOL, and B, like, I want to find a way we can handle emails where it's not an issue anymore.
Like, it is. It's probably AOL and stuff. That's the thing is, I'm telling you from a government employee perspective, like, our shit never works.
Really?
When they do FOIAs, they come find out and they're like, oh, we deleted all those emails. We have no idea where they went because, I mean, government is inept. We always want to put this big thing, this conspiracy, but there's a conspiracy of morons. It's not a conspiracy.
Confederacy of dunces.
Yes, it's a complete ineptitude.
Right. I feel.
But not across the. I hear you. Yes.
As a generalization.
Right. But I mean, there's plenty of. You know, there's a lot of. I mean, we know a lot of good people trying to do good work and some trying to do good things. So I hesitate to adapt that manner of thinking because I think it breeds Trump votes.
Mike Pence is smart enough to use Gmail. I'm confident in that. I also think he probably won't launch one of 7,000 nuclear weapons. And we all know Donald Trump will, which is why we should all be focusing on that existential threat. As important as the police reform agenda is, my friend.
But how are we going to know if he has a private email server, how Indiana's Homeland Security people respond to a terrorist attack in Belgium? Like, we need to know. I don't know. I find it and here's one other thing, and I'm curious, Ryan, because, again, if you worked in government, 30 years ago, these people had meetings and they had phone calls, and it was the easiest thing in the world, right? Now, because of the, again, we're not quite keeping up with technology. To me, I don't know. I don't want a government that works in the shadows, but it's okay with me if a chief executive or someone on his staff emails someone else about a pressing public matter, and we don't have to see all those exchanges because we don't have, they don't walk side by side with a stenographer who writes down everything was had in a private conversation. We know that's private. Why is the email automatically public?
I want to know every conversation that Donald Trump as chief executive has had with Vladimir Putin and has had with, you know, Carter Page and Paul Manafort and Steve Bannon and all these guys.
Some
don't you? Don't
rise,
you want to know that?
Some of them rise to that level.
Oh, okay. Well, those we want, but not the other ones. No, I mean, it's the same everywhere. You got to bring it in the light. You can't let them conduct business in the darkness. And if they do, and you allow them to make money off of it, there's a financial incentive for darkness, dark things to happen.
We are on the same side. We really are. This is not. I'm not secretly pretending to be on your side when I'm not. We are on the same side. But what about conversations that aren't electronic? I mean, or phone conversations that. Well, now that we know those are recorded, also. But I mean, meeting in the hall to discuss this thing, this very issue, then we never know. And so the idea that suddenly, because there became a way to track every memo, used to be, and we'd send memos back and forth, then we'd find the smoking gun. Oh, the memo that says, hey man, the carburetor blows up, and then they destroy that memo, and then it gets exposed.
And that's a good thing. Look, sunlight is the best disinfectant, right? And we need sunlight on the governor's decisions as an executive. We need sunlight on the president's decisions and the mayor's decisions as executives. We, the people, need to be able to see why they're making the decisions they're making and who they're making them with. Because a lot of times the decisions aren't made in the committee room. They're not made on the floor of the legislature. They're not made on the floor of Congress or even in the White House. They're made on K Street. You know, they're made in the lobbyist's office. In backroom, smoke-filled,
we're still not
gonna, backroom
I'm just
decisions.
Saying, we're still not going to know that. And as a result, we are running the risk of hyper-focusing on emails. And then we are unable to distinguish between what is grave and what is merely careless or silly.
Right.
And we need to always distinguish what is grave from what is careless or silly.
Enough about the damn emails.
Right,
enough about the damn emails. I did want to add, my favorite little tidbit of this was that Mike Pence's email was compromised on his personal AOL account. Here's the screen grab of what happened. Someone hijacked his email account back last year and sent out this email. Here's a part of it that says, I'm urgently in need of some money to pay for our hotel bills and my flight ticket home because they said he was stuck in the Philippines. And we'll definitely refund you as soon as back home. Kindly let us know if you would be able to help us out so we can forward you the details required for wire transfer.
That's funny.
I think that's hilarious. So the thing is, like, whatever the emails were that It's like, there is one person I know for a fact has had access to that I'm a little worried about, and it's the person who tried to use it to get people to fund a fictional flight home for the Pence family. So, like, while I totally get it, there's nothing more frustrating than, like, a dysfunctional email apparatus, because what you're trying to do, like, politics is discourse in the service of power. Like, you need to have the discourse part so you can make sure that, you know, power is in the hands of the right people. So I want to fix that. And it just seems like, if the answer is AOL, let's do AOL. If it's Gmail, sure.
I don't know. But, like, I need it.
We got to move on, all but right, I just right. want to point out that one of my favorite moments of the campaign, and I'm a dog lover, I love all dogs, it's always sad when a dog dies, but Mike Pence's dog died in October, and there was a great tweet, I don't remember, but it was Mike Pence's dog's October surprise, colon, death.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Brutal.
We got to take a break right now. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to the Young Turks, everybody. Before we continue, there is a poll that you need to answer if you give a damn about this whole thing. Go to tytnetwork.com/response. And the question that we have up there right now is, who should have given the Democratic response to Trump at the joint session speech? The options are Bernie, Hillary, Obama, Cenk, or the old dude who gave it. And it's a photo, I believe, of Homer Simpson's dad. So that's that. So we would like for you guys to go and give your feedback there. Also, don't forget to check out the post game. Michael is on the post game today with David Kohler, correct?
That's right. And Malcolm.
And Malcolm.
Don't leave Malcolm out. He's important.
No, I forgot. I didn't read his whole name. Here on the announcement, it says, the illustrious Malcolm Fleschner. Yeah.
And so Michael and Dave Kohler on the post game?
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to that.
It's going to be great. It's awesome. Always fun. The Friday post game is just one of the most fun things you could ever imagine. All right, let's move on. The Keystone Pipeline is back on track to be constructed. And if you remember during the joint session of Congress, the speech that President Trump gave, he said that he was putting forward an initiative to make sure that the new pipelines constructed are constructed with American steel. Here is his follow-up justification for that. Let's take a look.
My job is not to represent the world. My job is to represent the United States of America.
It turns out not so fast. according to a White House spokesperson who talked to Politico, the Keystone XL pipeline is currently in the process of being constructed, so it does not count as new retrofitted, repaired, or expanded pipeline. The Commerce study that is is still in the process of being written, and it will only yield a requirement that developers use American steel, quote, to the maximum extent possible and to the extent permitted by law. And the Dakota Access Pipeline, another project Trump insisted would be built with American steel, will only be 57% American made. This is just a weird position to be in, where now I'm like, you're already screwing me. At least screw me the way you thought you said you were going to screw me, you know? So that's that.
Is this another one of those distractions, though, where, again, we're talking about whether it's American steel or not, when the discussion is supposed to be no right. pipelines.
Right. So what do you
say? I mean, it's like we're arguing about the steel. So with Veteran Stand, I'm the executive director of Veteran Stand, a nonprofit. We formulated out of the Veteran Stand for Standing Rock and are continuing our movement. We've partnered with the Cheyenne River Sioux, and we're going to continue to fight the Keystone XL pipeline going forward. So if you care about this stuff and you want to fight it, well, then you can follow us at veterans-stand.org and help us go out there and continue to fight that. Dakota Access isn't completed yet, and Keystone's not completed yet. We can still fight these things, and don't get in your mind that if one of these pipelines gets completed, then somehow that's a victory. That's a false paradigm as well. Whether they get completed or not, the war can't, and battles for these things can't be over.
So what are the things that are happening now? Because it does seem to me, when I saw this story, I'm like, oh my God, I'm even pissed about the way it's happening. It's already, the ship has left the station. What can people do to get involved? What kinds of things? What's the strategy moving forward?
Well, I think one of the most important constituencies for Democrats and progressives is labor unions, right? And the problem is right now is that a lot of the labor unions, especially the building trades of the AFL-CIO, are in favor of these pipelines. Like, they're helping, they're like waving the flag with Trump, right? And they're like, I literally have like a picture on my phone of This is Donald Trump with the president of the AFL-CIO, okay? Richard Trumka and Donald Trump meeting and smiling for the cameras, and all the building trades guys come in and they meet with Donald Trump and they're in bed with making this happen.
They're even sharing most of the letters in their names.
And it's just like they've made a deal with the devil. You know, and I think it's a really big problem for the labor unions, a core of the Democratic and progressive constituency base, to be siding with Donald Trump and helping to build these pipelines. They should be standing with environmentalists and people who care about their children and immigrants who are under threat in this country saying, no, I don't want your meeting with this president. He's not a legitimate president. Yeah. He's a danger to the American people. He's a danger to the U.S. Constitution and to a lot of our members. As labor union leaders, they shouldn't be meeting with them. You know, they shouldn't be meeting with the Trump regime at all. And they're helping build this pipeline right now. So if you're in a labor union, call your local shop steward, call your state labor union president, you know, the head of your CLC, and say, look, we can't be in business with these people. We can't be helping build these pipelines. That's something you guys can do.
That's such a dynamite, like, rhetorical stance for the Trump administration to take.
Look, they're not, these guys are not, they didn't win by accident. Well, they sort of did win by accident, but they put themselves in a position to win by accident. By being pretty good at this, they are politically savvy, and they tapped into something there, and they put the labor movement in an incredibly difficult position that they ultimately went with the money. That's, you know, I mean, I couldn't agree with Ryan more, and I couldn't think it is less likely to happen.
Yeah.
Right?
Why would they? Why would they? I mean,
well, because
I got a job. I'm building something.
Because long term, Donald Trump is not going to stand with American labor, and those guys he's got working with him are not going to stand with American labor. They're not. They've been against labor their whole lives. Trump has fought with labor unions his whole lives. All those guys he's got working for him have fought with labor unions their whole lives. The Republican Party for 45 years now, longer, but that's as long as I've been alive, plus a little. Have tried to break the back of American labor and have succeeded in large part. And the notion that now, because they're dangling the jobs for a few years to build pipelines, that that's going to overall transform the party's position on labor is foolish thinking. It is as foolish as journalists who saw that speech and thought, oh my God, he's pivoting. Thank goodness he's coming back to the norm. Television journalists pundits who, oh, this is what we've expected. This is what we're comfortable saying. This is the establishment position that Trump will drift back to the center. We always knew he would. They're not paying attention, and I think labor is missing it here.
Yeah, and here's why not. Here's why not for the jobs and for the money. Because you don't want to be the union that represents the guards at the front of the concentration camp.
That's right.
Okay, you don't want the 30 pieces of silver that turn in a third of your membership base of unions writ large, you know, including SEIU and all the other unions. They're immigrants, you know, and they have immigrant members that are their friends and their family members and their community members. Those people feel under threat in this country by this president. That's why you don't sit down with them and say, hey, can we go, build something that's going to create 1,000 jobs over 30 years with them? Because it's so disrespectful to the mass constituency of your organizing base. That's why you don't take those 30 pieces of silver.
But disrespect, Ryan, is not going to do it. It's got to be proven that it's the right thing to do for your pocketbook long term.
Right.
And I think that is true. But I don't think first of all, you're right in a sense is that union members, those are bonded folks and they care about other unions. And so it might have more persuasiveness
than
it would. It is, that's right. But long term, it is a disastrous stand and it's frustrating. I got Republican friends who will hear that and think, look, you just want to get in the way of everything Trump does.
Goddamn right we do.
That's right. Yes, we do. And it's not the same as George W. Bush, who was a catastrophe. But it is different. There is an obvious questions about legitimacy here. And George Bush didn't ostracize Muslims. I mean, for crying out loud, he went into those two wars without managing to ostracize Muslims like this. To say nothing of George Bush's legitimate efforts that he thought, I'd like to make an immigration deal. That seems like a good idea. Seems smart politically and seems like the right thing to do. And he was unable to do that because of the Republicans, mostly in the House. So, yeah, there is only one position to take. When you see a fraud, you don't make deals with the fraud
exactly.
To legitimize the fraud, even if it means sometimes you're having to oppose things that you're in favor of.
And do you think that he's not going to turn around and motherfuck you?
Of course he is.
This guy, it's like, what? That's his business model.
He's a 70-year-old,
you know? So
mendacious, narcissist, anti-curious fraud. He is not, you know what, I'm going to change. That is inconceivable
yeah.
that is about to happen.
Yeah. Is there another set of labor unions, like alternative transportation of oil, like people who are driving the oil now?
Well, that's the thing, is you're taking those jobs away. I've gone and complained about that a bunch of times. The construction of these pipelines literally takes away jobs from all those truck drivers who are transporting now. We say, oh, well, they can spill too. Yeah, but they spill one truckload, bro. It's, and we'll recover.
And look, the real solution is we need to be building clean energy jobs.
Yes,
those create massive amounts of manufacturing jobs here in the United States. We can pivot to a clean energy economy. We don't need to be digging up dirty oil or doing hydraulic fracturing and fracking. What we need to be doing is installing solar panels and windmills and, you know, getting hydro, you know, like water, like using water to create energy, like not digging up the remains of dinosaurs and burning them. You know, I mean, it's just, we're going to look back on this in history and just think, what were they thinking? Like, that they thought that they could live off of like a finite resource that was based on like millions of years of something decomposing. They're going to be like, why weren't they just using the energy from the sun and the wind and the water, you know?
I want to spend more time looking at photos on Ryan's phone.
All right, we're going to move on to Jeff Sessions news. You may have seen news recently of Jeff Sessions seemingly being caught lying to Congress during his confirmation hearings. Al Franken asked him, did you have interactions, or asking if you found out that somebody had interactions from the Trump campaign with members, with the Russians, what would you do? And then out of nowhere, Sessions said, I haven't met with them ever. No, that hasn't happened. And then it being found out that Sessions actually did have meetings during the RNC and one other time. Now, his defense, according to his spokesperson against that, Sarah Isger Flores, says he was asked during the hearing about communications between Russia and the Trump campaign, not about meetings he took as the senator, as a senator and a member of the Armed Services Committee. Now, in that, she seems to imply that when he was doing the meeting, he was a member of the Armed Services Committee. That was the hat that he had on. However, if you look at the way that this is very like inside journalism, but the way that he expensed his trip to the RNC during that meeting, he did not do so under a line item that was paid for as through his capacity as a member of the Armed Services Committee. The Wall Street Journal said Thursday he used campaign funds for the travel rather than official Senate Armed Services Committee funds. Sessions' campaign account made two payments of $1,395 to the Sheraton Cleveland Airport on July 16th, 2 days before the Republican convention.
I would have killed to stay at the Cleveland airport. We were way, way, way out.
So that's that. It seems like this is building that case. Now the question is this a case we need to build? How does everyone feel? Sessions has since recused himself from any investigation, about Russia and the Trump, campaign. Is this, when you see this, what do you feel? What are you thinking when you see this?
There's three people that have already been fired by Donald Trump because of connections to Russia, right? You have Michael Flynn, National Security Advisor, who we all know just got dismissed. You have Paul Manafort, who's campaign manager. And the reason he was fired is obviously because there was people in the intelligence community came and told the Obama administration and the Trump campaign, look, there's these, you know, communication going back and forth. There's financial interests going back and forth.
Millions
you need to get
dollars.
Rid of Paul Manafort. That's why we get Steve Bannon, right? And then you have Carter Page, who is setting up an oil deal for $500 billion worth of oil in the Arctic Ocean with the Russian government.
$500 billion
with a B.
That's right.
Right. And these are the people that have been fired already by Trump. And I think there's a great quote that just sums up the whole thing.
It's Carter Page, first of all, by the way, they denied first was even working for the Trump campaign.
Right. And still have it on their website that he was working for them, by the way, which is really funny. Yeah. But there's a former Bush White House aide, Nicole Wallace. This is what she said. It's inexplicable now why so many people had so many meetings with Russians that they forgot about. They're either the most forgetful team in political history or the most intimate with Russia.
Yeah.
And I think that just sums it all up.
Yeah, and it matters. It's important because Russia almost certainly hacked the DNC emails and then released them in a way that they thought, it seems to me, and I don't know for sure, we'll find out if there's ever an investigation, but I take them at the word that sources say the reaction in Russia was, they were looking to undermine Hillary. They were looking to weaken Hillary Clinton as president. Didn't really occur to them that the guy would beat her. Right? But bonus, extra bonus. So, yeah, it's serious. And of course, it's worth investigating. And of course, Jeff Sessions is lying. I mean, because the question Oh, because if that's true, then all you have to say is, well, obviously I've met with the ambassador, I'm a senator.
Oh, but right. wait, this isn't just any ambassador, okay? Mm-hmm. This guy, Ambassador Sergei Kislyak, he's Russia's top spy recruiter in Washington, D.C. He is a spy, he's known as a spy master in Washington, D.C.
What Ben were talking about is David Remnick and Evan Osnos of The New Yorker got into this deep from being in Russia, listening to Russian television and all. And that's what they're saying, too, is if you're in Russia, it's obviously clear that they were doing everything they could to just delegitimize Hillary a little bit because they assumed she would be president. She's a war hawk. They wanted to find some way to not get into a war with us. So they tipped the scales a little bit in his favor, thinking it wasn't actually going to go that way. And now they're all like, whoa, like we didn't know.
Well, I don't think that, again, I think it's a little extreme to say they weren't, I mean, obviously they didn't, I agree that they didn't want a war. Hillary Clinton, I don't think anybody is about to go to war with Russia, but they didn't want Hillary representing a strong NATO. Weakening NATO mm-hmm. yeah. has been Russia's goal throughout a weakened administration in Washington. It couldn't be more valuable
right.
for the Russians.
But that's loose. Like, what you got to do is, as Deep Throat said, you got to follow the money.
Totally.
And if you follow the money in this case, it spells treason. What happens is there's a $500 billion oil deal in the Arctic. They want to dig up all that oil.
Again,
but the economic sanctions keep them from the technology that Exxon owns that would allow them to dig up there.
Sure, I'm trying to answer to you why the Russians, why they're talking to the Russians. Because the Russians are coming to meet them and then they say no, and it's conjecture of why they say no. But like, we have the people that have dived into the age of technology and those that haven't. And the ones that haven't, they're seemed baffled that we can pull up information from 15 years ago and prove something. Like, they'll lie and they're like, oh gosh, you have evidence from that? It's like, yeah, dude, once it's on the internet, it's there.
Right. Because you can't tell the truth about treason.
Right.
Right.
Of
you
course.
Can't be like, yes, I sold our country down
lying.
The yes. river for 30 shekels of silver. You know, you can't just come out and like say that, right? And the reality is that Putin picked Trump to be our president, not because it's gonna make America great, right? He picked Putin to be our president because it's good for Russia. Or, I'm sorry.
That's a Freudian slip. Sorry. Yeah,
keep moving. Same difference, right? Putin picked Trump to be our president because it's going to be great for Russia.
Yes.
So, yes, it is worth obviously investigating. And it is significant that Jeff Sessions recused himself because the more steps you get, the more likelihood that you get a special prosecutor with teeth. And if that happens, there'll be a legitimate, real investigation that will hopefully weaken Trump so politically that we can get past this without it being
he'll be impeached,
right? Without it being as grave a crisis as it could be for this country.
Now, the process of finding the special prosecutor, the days of Ken Starr are over. As of 1999, that special prosecutor that we are all familiar
with,
independent counsel, that is not how it is. They allowed that to lapse, probably because both parties were like, wait, they're going to screw with us if there's an independent person for us. So either they have to reintroduce legislation to legitimize that specific flavor of independent prosecutor, or they can follow an independent, a slightly different named entity that would still fall within the Justice Department, that would still fall within the Attorney General's office.
What you're leaning at is that, no, I mean, recusing himself, yeah, he's recusing.
Yeah,
but that only means you're taking his word for it. You know, you think he's
even if they didn't find out about this meeting, like the guy, it's so difficult because this is an appointed position. Right. So he has to think 100%, like it's so impossible to divorce any conflict of interest because the job you wanted and you got that you signed up for on March 6, 2016, when you fully endorsed Donald Trump, that came to fruition. Of course you're going to be on that guy's coattails.
And there's a great quote from Sessions where he says, he's talking about Bill Clinton, right? And he's like, if the chief law enforcement officer of this country has been found guilty of perjury, then he can't sit in any government office any longer. And I'm just like, when Republicans really like, you know, getting rid of government officials for lying about perjury until it's one of their own. And I just keep wondering, where are the Republicans of conscience in this country?
There are some duty to country above loyalty to party.
Where are they?
But, you know, he's their buddy, man. And he served with them in the Senate. I mean, that ridiculous notion when Elizabeth Warren was told to essentially be quiet and sit down, or however they phrased it, because they thought she was being disrespectful. I mean, the guy's nominated for attorney general. That's his job now. Nominee for attorney general, not your nonsense comedy with a fellow colleague from the Senate. This is what gets Jeff Sessions, and it needs to be much more than this because people are standing with him right now. I mean, it is the 39th most reprehensible thing Jeff Sessions has done in the last 7 years. But if it's the thing that gets him, great, so be it.
Right, And with the Jeff Sessions and his integrity, the argument that they should confirm Gorsuch because he went so flawlessly through a lower court confirmation process, like if if this, the way they went through a judge appointment process is any reflection on someone's character, look at Sessions, completely rejected from that process. It's very frustrating.
I'm stealing this, but Neil Gorsuch, you know, there's real questions about Trump's ties to Russia. There needs to be an investigation. And until that happens, I just think we should let the next president fix the Supreme Court justice. I think that's the only fair thing to do. There's an election in 2020.
In addition, about Jeff Sessions, there are other people who are on the Senate Armed Services Committee. The Washington Post reached out to a ton of them, or to all of them, and of the 20 Senate Armed Services Committee lawmakers who responded, every senator, including Chairman John McCain, said they did not meet with the Russian ambassador last year. The other lawmakers on the panel did not respond.
Weird that the senator who was most supportive of Trump is the one guy to meet with him. That's just a coincidence.
And this is like how a political party commits suicide, right? If they don't stand up and say, look, meeting with the top spy in DC for the other side, right, for the Russians is like wrong, it's treason. We have to get rid of these people. We have to fire Jeff Sessions. We have to get rid of Jared Kushner. We have to get rid of Steve Bannon. If you don't do that as the Republicans in this country, then like you're just committing suicide as a political party. It's like the Whigs and Zachary Taylor all over again.
Life's just a bullet
took
cherries.
The words right out of no one's mouth.
In addition, getting back to what you were saying about just come forward and say it. Chris Hayes interviewed Carter Page, who you mentioned earlier. Just watch this interaction. My takeaway is do not ever talk to Chris Hayes because he will just generally be nice at you until you actually say what the truth is. Go for it.
You are at the center of the news today. USA Today saying that you and an individual named J.D. Gordon, another advisor, met with Sergey Kislyak at the RNC in Cleveland. Is that true?
Well, you know, Chris, it's interesting because that one of those pieces from the Washington Post that you showed, it starts out with a discussion of a meeting that I participated in with Prime Minister Modi.
But you did, in fact, meet with Sergey Kislyak there.
I'm not talking about any meetings that I had there because I learned confidentiality rules when I served in the U.S. Navy, and I'm sticking with the commitment that I made to the organizers that I would be, you know, keep it an off-the-record meeting, so I'm not going to talk about individual discussions or people I may or may not have met with. No meetings related to those issues, which were being brought out.
But I'm just asking you straight up, like, just for a straight answer, you're saying I can't confirm or deny. USA Today's reported it. You told one reporter I had no meetings with the Russians. Now you're telling me I had no meetings with the Russians about the things they were talking about. I'm just trying to get a straight answer. Like, did you meet Sergey Kislyak in Cleveland? Did you talk to him?
I'm not going to deny that I talked with him.
Although so you did talk to him.
I will say that I never met him anywhere outside of Cleveland. Let's just say that much.
The only time that you met him was in Cleveland.
I may have met him, possibly, might have been in Cleveland.
I only met with the number one spy for Russia in Washington, D.C. once in Cleveland. That makes it okay. As long as you just treason once, it's like the treason exception. Just
right.
Carter
right.
Page is a giant liar. Carter Page undid his lie and then relied in the same interview. Like, that's how much of a liar he is. He was like, yeah, okay, I guess I met. I did not meet with him. No, I didn't, except for the time I met with him. I didn't meet with him.
Right.
Yeah, and good for Chris Hayes.
Great.
Like, with those glasses and that hair, like, you think he's just going to be sweet.
Yeah, yeah, he is.
But he kept at it, and he got something really revealing. And the revealing thing is that this is the kind of person, and Stephen Miller is the kind of person, and Corey Lewandowski is the kind of person, and Steve Bannon is the kind of person who were drawn to a lying narcissist fraud like Donald Trump. So it's not just that Trump is bad news. The people around him are bad news because normal people, even wildly conservative Republicans like Evan McMullen, who again, everyone in the Young Turks should follow, we don't agree about anything, right? But he believes in this country and he knows, he sees these guys and he knows they're bad news instinctively. Yeah. And he says it every day. And he doesn't say, oh, well, today he did a good thing, so I'm with it. He's dangerous. Guys like Carter Page and Steve Bannon and Stephen Miller, who scares the crap out of me for some reason, Stephen Miller, that's why I always bring him up, who worked for Jeff Sessions, by the way, in the Senate. I hope I have that right. These guys, there's something wrong with them. And if you see that interview with Carter Page and you don't think there's something wrong with that guy and that Trump thought, I'm going to make this guy a foreign policy advisor, yeah, because no sane foreign policy advisor is going to stand with Trump. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this guy did.
And Carter Page went to Moscow to give a speech, right, where during the campaign, where he's talking about, like, you know, and meeting with people and business leaders and financial leaders in Moscow during the campaign. And they were like, no, don't do that. during the campaign, and then somebody from the campaign was like, no, it's okay. Go ahead, go over there, talk to them. Go to Moscow and talk with financial and business leaders in Moscow during the campaign that you work on, and then they like, they're like, oh, well, we're releasing you from the campaign. Oh, you never worked for the campaign. Whereas now we obviously see from Carter Page, he did work for the campaign. He did meet with the ambassador, who is a spy master, and he was over in Moscow talking about making a deal for economic sanctions this oil deal in the Arctic.
He runs a big energy company that does business only in Russia and Central Asia.
Right. We're not peeling back layers. That's the thing.
One layer.
And he's given speeches about here's the reason that sanctions don't work. We should repeal sanctions. And then what he has is one foot in a meeting on advisory committee for the Trump campaign and one foot, literally 2 feet in Russia. And he just has to pass forward back and forth information, just like Michael Flynn did, essentially, saying, listen, we're going to be good with you because we are going to be the folks in the room who are saying roll back sanctions.
And by the way, please, that list I gave of the people who go work for Donald Trump, add Mike Flynn. That's the kind of guy.
Am I dumb? Because we keep talking about people, not not the actual events that transpired. We're slamming all these people and their personalities, but we're not sticking to what actually happened. I mean, explain it to me. Like, what is wrong with an unpaid policy advisor talking to Russia and Trump? I don't understand.
So why is Michael Flynn fired? He's fired because he goes and says, when Donald Trump gets elected, right, and we're working to get him elected, if he gets elected, we'll remove the economic sanctions. That gives you $500 billion to a state whose economy functions on oil.
That's not Carter Page, though.
That was Michael Flynn. Michael Flynn does that, okay? He says, we'll remove the economic sanctions, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, help us get our boy Trump elected. That's what's wrong. It's a quid pro quo. It's classic politics, man. You help us get elected, we'll get rid of those sanctions and save your country's economy.
It's everywhere. No, we need to investigate it.
It needs to be investigated.
Right, it needs to be, but come on, man. First of all, why are you hiring Carter Page? He's a lunatic. And Michael Flynn, why are you...
Also, the specific reason why he's not confirming or denying, like his weird linguistic backflips, are because he needs to protect the integrity of something he explains elsewhere in that interview, where it is a conference where they set up ambassadors and representatives of oligarchs to just have secret meetings. Like, that's why. And he wants to get invited back. He says as much in that meeting. And from a 10,000 foot view, I think the more we have folks who represent big groups of people, the population of, you know, the normal folks, the more we have them represented and the less we have the representative of someone who's showing up and, you know, handing over money and favors in return for other favors, like that's a bad thing. And that's what we should be trying to root out. What, to your point, specifically, like, it feels like the Hydra. Like, you cut off one head, who are they going to replace it with? Not my choice.
Because this is nothing new. Like, I mean, this is just always backdoor channels, and now you can find out about it.
This is new.
Treason is new. I mean, since Benedict Arnold, you know, like, we haven't had treason of this level.
We're saying that it's new, but I mean, I'm just trying to stick to this actual thing and not bring other stuff in. Like, if he didn't have anybody trying to understand Russia and then went into foreign policy issues, we would all be saying, look, he didn't even get any counsel. He could at least had somebody talking to him.
So hire Condoleezza Rice.
But then again, we're talking about people.
But that makes the case.
Why
does everyone in his administration have really strong ties to Russia? I mean, they know a lot about Russia. They've done a lot of work in Russia.
We said
Paul Manafort, his former campaign manager, essentially his day job is like achieving the foreign policy objectives of the Russian Federation. Right. They know a lot about people in Russia. Right. They know dick about any other country anywhere in the world except the ones they want to bomb. Okay. So why is that? You make my point for me. Why is everyone in the Trump administration know so much about Russia, have so many connections to Russia, know so many people in Russia?
Because they did that intentionally.
Because Russia did that intentionally. Right. Putin picked Trump because it's good for Russia, not because he's going to make America great.
Yes, and that's but what the hell does that have to do with Carter Page in this exact incident?
Because he's part of the problem.
Right.
He was the guy making the
Page, Mike Flynn, and Paul Manafort were the guy, those were the guys making the deal. Those were the guys doing the deal.
Help us get Trump elected, we'll get rid of the sanctions, and you'll get $500 billion in oil. You were at the pipeline, man. I know you don't want them to dig up that oil in the Arctic.
I don't, but I'm not talking about that guy. Okay, I'm talking about foreign Trump advisors.
Mr. Carter Page also met with Russian
Carter
envoy.
Page's job is to go over to Russia and to make oil deals in Russia. He helped with the deal where they set up a company in the Caribbean between the Russian government and ExxonMobil to get the permits to drill in the Arctic.
And then
this
weirdly,
is no information.
And then weirdly, the head of ExxonMobil became Secretary of State.
I don't think that's weird at all. Let's take out the middleman.
And then tried to make it... The initiative that he had to try to make it more difficult to trace money given by his apparatus, which is like him saying, listen, the way you get stuff done in Russia is to identify the oligarch in charge and pay them with a bribe. And right. Like that's where it's at.
Is that not what we did in Panama?
No, it is.
Was that wrong?
Yes, but
oh, okay, so is this wrong?
But that's an action. What I'm trying to say is that we are looking at people who are doing nothing new, and if we focus on the actions, then we can fix the things for next time. Because when you focus on people, we end up thinking we can chop the head off, they put a new person in, and something will change. But if we don't focus on the methodologies and the institutions, then we will be totally missing the
point. The reason we're focused on this is because Russian interference in our election is the key to impeaching Donald Trump.
That's right.
It will happen, whether it's a year or 2 years.
I don't know if that's a good thing or not.
No, it is a great thing. And trust me, I'm from Indiana originally, okay? I know Mike Pence, and I know he's a total dirtbag of a politician, okay? I'm fully well aware. I have people in my community and my family, they're still affected by that man, right? But he's not going to launch one of those 7,000 nuclear weapons because somebody tweeted at him the wrong way at 3 a.m. Nobody has to give Donald Trump permission to do that. It is an existential threat, and this is the key to removing that existential threat. Think order of operations, man.
I hear you. That's just
We're
conjecture,
gonna deal
though.
Yeah.
It's conjecture that he would do something. We don't have evidence of that.
Well, the evidence, the smoking gun will be a mushroom cloud, my friend.
Let's go on to a story.
I get that.
Right.
Until then, it's conjecture.
What's the difference? Here's a dynamic. Let's move on to the next story.
Beauty and the Beast now? Or just get away
no.
This
we're going to get
pretty much covered like everything bitching about.
Oh, no, there's
really
more.
Only one topic.
There's
always
there's one more thing. You may have seen in Trump's address to the joint session of Congress that he said, well, this quote about trivial fights.
The time for small thinking is over. The time for trivial fights is behind us. We just need the courage to share the dreams that fill our hearts, the bravery to express the hopes that stir our souls.
JR picked out a great little moment that you might have picked up on, but not a lot of people talk about. When he says the time for trivial fights is over, he looks over to like this side, gestures at the Democrats. There's a rumble, and in the back you watch like Paul Ryan just start kind of grinning and smirking. Yeah, regardless, the message was the time for trivial things is over. I'm going to essentially...
These aren't trivial things, man. This is not a trivial thing. And Michael, to your point in the last story that we did, and which bears repeating every single time, you say, is that not what we did in Panama? It is. Maybe this will be the time that as Americans we think, maybe we don't meddle in other people's elections.
That demands a change of institutions,
I got
not
you.
Personnel.
Well, I got it. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about changing it, but you can't get to changing it without talking about what happened, and what happened involves the names of people. So, and Russia does this consistently. They just, this time, they did it to a big country, and yeah. It worked. And I think it is very difficult for Americans to come to grips with the way it's difficult for us to come to grips with us not being number one, that it turns out we're number 28, right? In so many things, in infant mortality, in education, in science, in math, in reading, all these things that we think we're the best in the world at. Well, it turns out we're not. We're also suckers. We also got played in a way that we think, oh, this is what Russia does to Lithuania, right? This is what Russia does to Estonia. And so when Trump says, I'm sorry, just to bring it back to this little thing, but then when Trump says the time to end trivial fights, he's hoping, he's trying to make a rhetorical flourish so that politically he can get past this stuff. And for all those people who praised him for his delivery, I think that's nonsense. His delivery was wildly weak, but that's his goal, to weaken the argument that this is a serious matter that needs to be investigated.
That's my favorite part of that clip, is actually that he's like on Xanax or something,
yeah, right.
Obviously, right? And everybody's like, oh, he was so presidential, yeah. So presidential, the moment he became president. And I'm like, are you kidding me? This is like State of the Union karaoke. This is like, what would you do if you had like a podium somewhere where anybody could play president and give a State of the Union? That's
right.
What it looked
it
like
is.
To me.
Yeah,
really.
The bar is,
totally,
you know,
karaoke.
It's like karaoke president, you know?
On the bar that he has
you're
to
like,
get
oh,
over.
I kind of hit that one note, like I kind of okay, that was great. You know,
the bar is fiber optic cable buried 30 feet under the ground. Yeah, you can get over it pretty easily, and they'll think you're being presidential. But if you think that speech was, I mean, that speech was not as well delivered as George W. Bush, who was not good at this, delivered it, right?
Yeah.
To say nothing of Obama or Reagan.
Well, you wanted to mention someone else, another member of the Trump circle that was, who is this? Robert Mercer, a billionaire who, for background information, is the biggest donor to the Trump campaign, an owner of Breitbart, and was the person who suggested that Kellyanne Conway and Steve Bannon join the inner circle. So this is someone who is actually creating the structure of what the internal cabal of Trump advisors is. And you say that you have a source saying that he has connections through the Ukraine and Russia that's just been unearthed.
Yeah, so Reverb Press today just came out with an article, an exclusive, that says Robert Mercer owns a company called Renaissance Technology, and they created Cambridge Analytica, which really helped with the Brexit campaign, the Leave campaign, to win over there, and then it helped with Donald Trump to win the campaign over here, right? Now, he gets Bannon and all these guys into the White House, but you got to ask yourself, you know, again, follow the money. Why? Why does he want these guys in the White House? And he made an investment 2 years ago that seemed like an idiot's choice, right? It was just like such a foolish investment. It was a telecom in the Ukraine, right? Now, investing in the Ukraine at that time was crazy because Russia is like pummeling them, right? And so any investor would be like, stay away from that. It's junk. You know, it's garbage. It's like Lehman Brothers before the crash. But this guy, Robert Mercer, comes in and buys up a ton of its stock, right? Knowing something that nobody else knows. And what he knows is that when the economic sanctions get lifted, right, that this company he bought, which is called Vimpelcom, right, and they're rebranding it as Veon.
Vimpelcom.
No, they're changing the name to Veon, is that it's going to be massively profitable in that region of the world, in former Russian satellite countries, in Russia, in the Ukraine. And that kind of explains why this big hedge fund billionaire is behind all of this. It's about the money, Lebowski. It's the money, Lebowski.
So those guys,
it's always the money.
That suggests that Mercer thought there was a reasonable chance that Trump would win. I guess if he did, he's the top funder of the campaign. You don't send that money in unless you think he's got a chance to win. Yeah, the ties are enormous. That's a really interesting story because Mercer is really the most powerful voice in Trump's ear, even if it's not directly Mercer, but through Bannon.
All right, we have time for one more story. Do we want to do Beauty and the Beast, or do we want to do the tweet about Chuck Schumer eating donuts?
Oh, Beauty and the Beast, man.
All right, it's a tale as old as time, tune as old as song. Beauty and the Beast, it has been reported, will have a gay character.
Yeah.
That's true. Let me find this piece of paper before we move on.
But even let's stop at that headline real quick. This is a show that is about bestiality.
Yeah. That's the thing.
We're like, oh my God, there's a gay guy in it.
Yeah.
She's banging a half lion, half human, and we're concerned because somebody's gay?
And it was pretty gay before. I don't know. The whole thing is about like pre-colonial antique furniture that puts on show tunes.
Right.
Like, that's the gayest thing I've ever heard.
Right.
Here's a line. You can ask any Tom, Dick, or Stanley, and they'll tell you whose team they prefer to be on. Like, that is a quote from the old one and the new one.
Yeah.
And so there's a petition out now for folks, 58,000 people. This, when I got into work today, 50,000 people had signed it, 8,000 more. Sign the boycott, tell Disney no to LGBT agenda. It's graphic 19.
How many people signed it?
58,000.
Holy cow.
Have you seen the original Beauty and the Beast?
Of course.
Yes.
Like, doesn't everybody know the candlesticks gay?
Yeah.
I mean, really, like, why are we arguing about this now? Like, seriously, the last one. Wasn't the candlestick
gay? I know. He wasn't gay because the very last scene, when the sexy French feather duster becomes a sexy French maid, he's like, and he runs off after her. So, I don't know. But then again, they were all locked up together for a long time.
Sexuality is a spectrum.
Okay? There you go. Like, yeah, especially when you got turned into furniture.
Where are you at on candlestick to like?
So, but here, I really want to know. Like
a chair.
Like, is this? They said it would be a really gay moment. LeFou, Gaston's friend, is going to be played by Josh Gad, is going to be the one who has the gay feelings. And the quote is essentially, one moment he wants to be Gaston and the other one he wants to kiss Gaston.
Gaston's the asshole, right?
Gaston's the big
bad
one.
Guy,
this guy right here. And then LeFou's his little friend. I don't know. I talked to some parents. They're like, actually, I'm fine with there not being any gay characters because I don't want to have this discussion.
Too bad.
And my response is like, your kid's not going to notice.
Well, then, totally. Why would I mean, you could say the same thing about heterosexual couples. Well, I don't really like want them making out because I don't want to explain that to my kids. Tough. Like, characters kiss, okay? And you got to explain these things to your kids. And I do want you to have that conversation when they're 4 or 5, not when they're 14 or 15, right? And I do want you to say, you know, it's okay for those characters to be gay. And if you're in Alabama and you're like, no, the candlestick and the chair can't get together,
right?
Because that would be gay. I want the kid to look at their parents and be like, that's super fucked up. I love that candlestick and that chair.
My daughter just, you know, I don't know, not just, but, you know, whatever, we're talking. And when she goes, she's made up a husband for herself named Daniel. I don't care for him. She's 3, by the way.
Did he ask permission?
Should be 4 this month. But she... But, you know, she's like, but you're married to mom. She's like, but you couldn't marry Daniel because Daniel's a boy, right? And I'm like, yeah, that's right. make America great. And you just, it's not complicated. You go, yeah, no, sure you can.
Yeah, exactly.
Some people marry boys. I'll be honest, most boys marry girls, but many boys marry boys. And she's like, all right, that's cool. It.
It's not, exactly.
And it's not a hard conversation. It's nothing. And if she saw them kissing, I mean, she didn't see any movies, but if she saw them kissing, she's not going to think it's weird. Or if she thinks it's weird, because that doesn't meet some expectation that she has in her head, you just tell her it isn't. And that's the end of that. It's not complicated.
And if you're a bigot, I hope you don't go watch this movie, because it looks awesome, right? And I'm so excited about this movie. And if you're a bigot, I want it to cost you the joy of watching movies like this. Like, we should put a gay character in, like, every, like, TV show out there, every movie out there, just to be like, there is no entertainment that you people can watch anymore. Like, you're going to have to go back to reading books and hopefully teach your kids to read some books, and your kids will all grow up liberal.
They didn't. That's right. You saved it there. I was like, they don't read books. That's mean. Of course they do. I'm sorry. But for bigots, you're probably right. But 58,000 people signed that, right? That was the number?
58,000.
Saying Disney, no gay character, right? Yeah. 127 million people downloaded the trailer.
Exactly. Sign the opposite.
Right. So, exactly. I mean, I got it. It's bad. But it's 127 million to 58,000. It is not close.
Belle doesn't know that the Beast would turn back into a human ever.
Yeah. So what do you got? What's your problem?
When I watch it, I'm like, well, she knows that he was originally a prince who was a human. No, she shows up at a castle and there's a lion dude who kidnaps her. Oh my God. A follow up question. What's the sexiest non-human Disney character?
Non-human. Aladdin.
Non-human. Oh, just because he's a rape. Anyways.
Herbie,
the love bug. No, the answer is the female squirrel from Sword in the Stone.
What?
Remember that?
No,
I didn't realize. You obviously prepared your answer.
No. I had that.
And if you want to see Breaking Paradigms in a movie, go see Get Out, man. That is a great movie.
Everybody, I missed it for our review, but... Christy and Alonzo, Matt Achety on What the Flick. They loved it. Everybody loves it. It's getting great, great praise. It's clearly inventive and cool.
The best episode of Black Mirror yet.
I was saying that this weekend I would like to see, I'm not going to see either of them, but I would like to see Get Out and John Wick 2, which is apparently oddly great. And again, was told, no,
people watch
you'll have
movies?
The greatest weekend ever. Both
really?
Fantastic, yeah.
Jordan Peele of Key and Peele directed.
That's right, he directed Get Out.
Get Out, crazy. You guys don't get out, you stay right there. We have, thank you guys so much.
Thank you. Could never have made that transition.
Where can we meet? Where can we see all you guys?
BenMag77 on Twitter.
Considering we were talking about how we can fight these things, I was just going to steer you towards my organization, veterans-stand.org, and you know, find out what you can do. Reach out to us, and we'll figure out what those directions are. That direction might be, hey, you're going to have to call Ryan, but we'll figure out what that is.
So yeah. Michael is taking a stand with other veterans to save indigenous people. I might say something funny this weekend about Kellyanne Conway on Twitter. So, we're both doing our part.
If you want to get involved in the resistance and help impeach Trump, then go to AmericansTakeAction.com. Sign up there, click on your state, join the Google group there, and we're kicking his ass every day of the week. So we're having a lot of fun doing it, too.
Awesome.
God bless.
And you can watch me on Pop Trigger. You can watch a few messages, and then we'll be back with Hannah. Kenny Hamilton will be here. I will be here, and Ben and JR. So whole panel ready for you after the break. See ya.